Okay. Would like to welcome everybody to the study session. I'm looking around, seeing all the newbies showed up, but Councilmember Jones didn't come. Do we have a problem here? I mean, you know, maybe he had second thoughts about hanging around. Would like to welcome everybody. We have a light yet very important schedule this morning, and we're going to begin with a discussion on or presentation on the bond program. Just a little bit of a background on this from my standpoint, at least. I believe this bond proposal was presented to the previous council and acted upon last October, November. And as we all know, a lot has changed in the 7 or 8, 9 months since then. And so we thought it would be good to revisit this in light of the current conditions we have and the conditions we're economic and otherwise in the foreseeable future. So, Mr. Brady, I guess we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mayor, and members of council. What we'll do this morning is Mr. Raines, Mr. Odom here, prepared to kind of go just briefly through the package and the projects, also talk about the financing that was anticipated, the leverage of outside funds that would come to the city, and they'll go through that. We have the different departments from transportation and public safety here to answer any questions if you need any at the end. So at this time, Brian, we'll turn over to you.
Thank you, Chris. Good morning, Mayor, Council. Welcome. With me this morning is Chuck Odom. As Chris said, Chuck's our budget director. Just for your perspective, I'm deputy city manager with the city. I'd like to go through this morning the bond election that the previous council has called. It relates to two questions that would appear on the November 2008 ballot that total together $408.8 million. On slide two here, you can see the breakdown of how those relate to both the public safety and the street bond projects. As Chris did mention, there are representatives here from all the departments that can talk specifically to any of the projects you may have questions on, but I thought I'd quickly go through each of those lists. The public safety projects are broken down into three areas, three categories. They cover major facilities, facility improvements, and necessary equipment that's deemed important by the public safety departments of police and fire. The three groups total together, as I said previously, $178.2 million. And as noted at the bottom of the slide, there are operating expenses that come with these facilities that are included in these projects, like fire stations, things of that nature, that we're going to have to talk in the latter part of this presentation on the funding strategy for. Getting right into the projects, first, the group is broken down into joint projects. These are major communications and communications facilities projects. Four of them identified here, along with a replacement of a substation, the fire station and police substation at Williams Gateway Airport, which is station 215. That's the one that's listed at the bottom. It's an old station that's out there that needs to be replaced and moved to a different location. The joint projects for public safety total $78 million approximately, and we've rounded these numbers just for presentation perspective. I'll move over to slide five, public safety, and these are the police-only or police-specific projects. They include some major facilities like replacement of the Dobson Range substation that the police department has outgrown and is constrained by physical limitations at that area, as well as the reuse of the current court facility that backs up to our police headquarters building that will be changed into an arraignment center to arraign prisoners as moving forward. There's also a couple other projects there you can see, including improvements to the firing range and some improvements to the Center Against Family Violence facility that's here on First Street in downtown. On page six are the fire projects. They total approximately $64.2 million. Significant part of this is replacement of existing apparatus. We do bond for our replacement of our apparatus. It has a 10 to 15 year life, and our bonds, we structure our bond sales and payments to only to last for the usable life of that equipment. What we don't want to structure is have a 20 year bond on a 10 year piece of equipment. So we do structure on the replacement of our apparatus bond sales to equate with usable life of the equipment. There are new fire stations as well as some replacement station for Station 203, which is located on University Drive just between Alma School and Dobson. We've outgrown that station and need to replace that, as well as a variety of other aspects which, if you have questions, the fire department can talk to. I did include on slide 7, and Chief Beck is here to talk about his response area maps. I think listed in green are the current stations. Listed in blue are the proposed general locations for the new stations. So those are available, and you can read, and Chief Beck can go into those if you have questions here at the end of our project discussion. You'll get fairly familiar, I think, with this map and the station location map within your next 2.5 to 4 years as you move through this these projects. And just if you have any questions or if I'm going too fast, just holler at me, please. On page 8 starts our street bond projects. This gets a little bit more involved in terms of funding and financing. The public safety projects, as we'll talk about later, are fairly straightforward. But the street bonds have a variety of funding sources, or the street program has a variety of funding sources. In the current bond election question, identifies 46, or it encompasses 46 separate projects. Would note that our 0.3% sales tax that was approved by the voters a couple years ago is really primarily used for street maintenance. There is some residual funding that is available for capital, but the predominant share of that money from that sales tax has always been dedicated to street maintenance. As our street transportation group say, it's their desire to paint the town black in terms of the streets, getting them seal-coated, overlaid, and rebuilt. So just wanted to bring that up for you. You can see at the bottom the breakdown of our, during the program period that's currently outlined in the 5-year bond election program, $152 million for street maintenance and a little over $17 million for capital that's applied to the program. On 9 is the location map of all the projects. It is sorry for the size. We can get you larger size of these maps if you have specific interests in where they are. Also, I would note that currently on the city's website, there is all this information in terms of the projects, the maps, and if someone clicks on this map on the city's website, it'll give them a project description of what's going on, where the actual project is, and what's being done. And Scott has brought his map. So that information's out there, and we can get you a similar size map that Councilmember Summers has there. Why don't I let Chuck walk through the financial structure in the next few slides, starting with slide 10, on how we leverage and the financing is made up for the street projects.
Okay. Part of the key to this was what we've been calling maximizing our match. We've got a $345.5 million program value. That is the full cost of all these street improvements. Programmed into this, we have $92.3 million in reimbursements from Prop 400 and the federal grant funds. Prop 400, just for remembrance sake, is the vote that was done regionally, and this is our share of those funds against specific projects coming back to us from those regional shares. One of the things, and Dan and his crew are here to talk about it more specifically, a lot of our projects were programmed toward the end of this regional program. That didn't get us a lot of things up front. Another one of the things that we were looking at when we were programming this is by moving some of these programs forward, we could save money by go ahead and financing some of them and then programming against the increased value of inflation. We could do them cheaper now, finance them, and still come out ahead on the financing. So I'm going to walk through some of that. What we've done is we've got the $92 million in reimbursements programmed in. We have $22.7 million of the 0.3% sales tax that we'd set aside for this program. And then we had $230.6 million in GO bonds required. So for $345 million in program value, we were leveraging the bonds at $230 million. So you can see we're getting a lot of value for our money. Now, we saved, when we called maximizing the match, $21.2 million by accelerating some of these programs. Go through on slide number 11. The specific programs that we'd brought into this are listed there, and you can see where we'd moved an average of 10.8 years forward. So you're getting a lot more bang for your buck on the projects and the impact. Yes, sir.
When did you do this calculation for maximizing the match, 21.2? With the rising cost of oil, has that number gone up?
We will go back and reevaluate. We have stayed, from when we approved the program, we have stayed consistent with those numbers so that we don't confuse or befuddle anyone of what we're doing. Once we set it, we can recalculate these at any time.
Okay.
And we do that each year. As a matter of fact, when we go through with our forecast, not to get into all that, we go back and reset all of our forecast inflation numbers. So we can go back and recalculate every fall. We will do that as a matter of practice.
Chuck, I also have just a general question. On this $92 million of Prop 400 federal and also this 0.3% in the HERF, mm-hmm. what is the allocation or the breakdown of the 92? How much is Prop 400 approximately? How much is federal?
Approximately $90 million.
Okay.
It's federal, 2.3. $90 million Prop 400.
Yeah.
2.3 federal, approximately.
There's been fewer and fewer federal grants available, right. As you all know. That's becoming more scarce.
And then on the street sales tax portion of the 22.7 is approximately 17.3, sir.
And on slide 10, there is that breakdown.
Oh, okay.
And then those were the project, getting back to number 11, if there are no more questions on that. Slide number 11, we had 11 projects advanced, and again, that 10.8 year advancement. So just kind of give you an example of what we did. If you look on slide number 12, if the way the program was originally set up for the regional vote, it was a 30-70 match. City was supposed to come up with 30% of the construction funds, and the region would come up with 70. Now what they did, though, on the planning side was they capped their inflation rate. So we all know that capped inflation rate, which is what 2.5%, does not keep up with what the construction costs were. So the longer we delayed those projects, just as in this example, something that was delayed from 9-10 to 24-25, our share went up $3.2 million in comparison to what it would have been done in 9-10. So in looking at that, it behooved us to do these projects as early as possible. So then it became, if you go to slide number 13, we just go through a quick example of how we calculated what this is. So that cost, accelerating at the pace it was, increasing the city's exposure to increased cost, then becomes a comparison of what does it cost us to finance it and do it earlier, and what would we net and gain. So just as a simple example, we just used the Hawes Road, Santan Freeway to Ray Road. Originally programmed in 2025, we moved it to 2010. So here's your cost between the 2 years, and you can see just from a project cost increase, it goes up $4.2 million. So under the way they have their calculations, their maximum exposure at a regional basis is $2.5 million. So the cost goes up on us significantly. So then when we figure in what it would cost to finance that program at about 5.5%, and lately our rates have been coming in less than that, but we used a 5.5% debt service ratio. The net financing cost is $1.3 million. We come up with a net savings of $2.8 million on that project alone.
Chuck, are those in real dollars? Are those in discounted amounts, or are those in?
Well, those would be in. Those are discounted because they're in current day savings.
Well, I know. Okay, so the cost increase, the estimated costs, and all that is discounted back to current dollars.
Well, the future cost would be future dollars.
Okay, so are we talking apples and oranges here, or are we talking apples and apples as far as the net cost savings and the future reimbursements and everything? Because the financing costs will be.
Well, I think
obviously closer to what we're talking about, whereas the future is or in future dollars. I'm just wondering, are we
where I think
where
we're
dollars?
Talking apples to apples is we're going to bond whatever the current dollar amount
right.
would be. So we're going to take the future reimbursement against another project in the future. So I think you're talking apples to apples because you're talking the current dollars it would cost us today.
Well, I understand in practice it'll be current dollars. I'm just wondering for this analytical, for the analysis, whether the one whether the 2.8 million is comparing current dollars with future dollars.
It is.
Whether it's comparing, okay.
It is. It
so
is.
That actual amount in reality would be less.
If
in
we
real
discounted
in
it at the same time, it would be less.
There will be a savings.
Yes.
Well, we think it'll be a savings depending on what discount rate we use, but it's going to be a little different, right?
It would be a little different.
Gotcha.
So that's the philosophy that we followed in determining this. And I do understand your point. It's well taken. I just, for comparison purposes, dollar for dollar, that's the way we stated it.
At some point in time, I'd like to figure out what kind of discount rate we're going to use so we can talk the same dollars. You know, whether it's 2010 dollars or 2012 dollars, we can get them both at the 2010 or 12 applying, you know, whatever discount rate. And I don't know what that is that you normally use, whether it's 6% or...
Yeah, typically for analysis purposes, we've always tried to stick with about that, what, 5.5, 6%?
The debt financing.
All right.
I note on page 14 that our transportation department has initiated efforts to advance the construction of the 802 freeway. That may be a new number for people in terms of freeway numbers, but that is the freeway that would come off the 202 down around Williams, the airport, Phoenix Mesa Airport. And to move up not only the construction of the interchange, but the first.
By the way, every time you call it Williams, I think we ought to have a jar and make you put a dollar in there. We might just be able to cut into this shortage if everyone in the city was charged a dollar every time we call it, because I know I would be out of pocket a lot of money. So,
do that one, Mayor, and I'm sure I'm going to use the wrong name for the mayor one of these times. We may have to do that. So, old habits are hard.
I guarantee you, there's people out there who have many names for the mayor. So don't worry about that.
So the idea is to move up the freeway construction by 4 years. This would be, again, from the interchange at the 202 for the first mile to Ellsworth Road. Since this is really a state project and a state road, it's not bond eligible, so we're going to have to use cash resources to do that. So we're going to have to go back and look at our street sales tax money and the available revenues there, as well as some of our HERF, Highway User Revenue Fund money, called HERF revenues, as we move forward. On page 15, just for perspective, I've given you the map of the location. Now, this map extends all the way down to Meridian. This was a good map to give perspective on location, but the advancement we're looking at only goes the first mile to Ellsworth. It does not extend from Ellsworth to Meridian. Just wanted to clarify that there.
Do you have any, as far as, and I don't know that we've even, I know we've talked about Meridian, are there any timing as far as what the state plans is to take it from Ellsworth to Meridian?
Mr. Butler or Mr. Stoddard may know that better than I, or Dan.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor and Council. Scott Butler. I'm sorry, Mayor, could you restate the question just
If we accelerate to Ellsworth, in the current ADOT plan, what is the time frame from Ellsworth to Meridian or to wherever it's?
Sure. Mayor, projected right now, phase two of construction would occur between 2020 would be when the freeway would open between Ellsworth and Meridian. Our hope, though, is that if we're able to accelerate the first phase to Ellsworth, that we could follow this up in a few years by accelerating the second phase to potentially move that up by 4 years so that we could have the full freeway all the way to Meridian open by 2016 instead of 2020.
Okay. ADOT is, correct me if I'm wrong, they plan out, what, 5 years ahead is what they budget for?
That's so correct.
This
they
is
do.
Just on their project, but there's no funding or anything in ADOT right now as it is. So if we accelerate, we're hoping that it would get into a five-year plan, right?
No, the beauty of this, Mayor, is that it is fully funded. It's okay. It's guaranteed by Prop 400 dollars. And so when we...
It's just a state thing in Prop 400.
It is. Gotcha.
But the good news is it is funded by Prop 400, mm-hmm. like some of these other regional projects, mm-hmm. but it still falls in within their capacity to do projects. I think that's kind of the terminology, okay. Isn't that right?
Absolutely.
Got something ability to go out and build them fast enough.
Absolutely. But Mayor, whenever we do advance it, it's with more of the certainty that those regional dollars are going to be backing it up.
Yeah, because I know a lot of times ADOT has these wonderful things on their list that they have no clue how they're going to pay for them. And so
there are several of those, as you know, Mayor, in Pinal County, where they put a line, but it doesn't have any money backing it up. We've always been in a different situation with Prop 400 backed projects. And that's also some of the certainty, and we can get into this at another time, about highway project advancement notes. When the city issues those to accelerate the freeway, we have the certainty of Prop $400 backing it up.
Okay. I understand that.
Cool. Scott, there are other projects in the loop that, in a way, this competes with for those Prop $400. Where are those projects?
Well, as Mayor and Councilmember Summers, as you know, that right now sales tax dollars are coming in a little bit less than projected when Prop 400 was initially approved. That being said, over the life of a 20-year project, they're expecting fluctuations both up and down. So at the end of the day, I know that MAG and ADOT are working closely monitoring, trying to stabilize any of the projects. Of course, the realistic portion of this is there are numerous big-dollar projects in the RTP, and several of those may not end up being constructed during that 20-year time frame. The double decking of the I-17 South Mountain Freeway is a question, even though we certainly hope that is constructed. At the end of the day, much like Prop 300, we find a way to work these issues out, so we believe that this will get funded.
So then funding and trying to front this, and I'm going back a little historically, trying to front this money a little bit has a number of effects. One is to show the state we're serious about getting this completed, so perhaps bumping this up. And secondly, there are some property owner issues between the freeway and Ellsworth Road that we're trying to alleviate, because we have a property owner sitting in limbo in an area that we know that freeway is going to be positioned at that location, correct?
That's true. And Mayor, Councilmember Summers, we were awarded through the STAN account, the State Transportation Acceleration Needs account, by the legislature a few years ago, $20 million to do advanced right-of-way acquisition along the alignment of the 802. What we found is by using that money to actually pay down the interest expense of accelerating the freeway, not only do we acquire the right-of-way and even more of the right-of-way, but we're actually able to construct the facility up to potentially 4 years sooner. And as anyone knows, as they've driven in that area of Southeast Mesa, that waiting until 2016 to have that freeway in could severely constrain transportation in the area.
And a final question is, that section, the freeway, we know is going to be placed in that location. It's been determined. Recent public open houses by ADOT have discussed four different Pinal County routes. Mm-hmm. Three of those follow this general path, and then the fourth one is completely different. How certain are we? Are we beyond 75% certain that the freeway is going to extend along this route from Ellsworth to Meridian? Or maybe that's for Dan. No, Dan's kicking it back to you.
Simple answer is yes. Okay. There's only a set amount of money in Prop 400, and that somewhat dictates the alignment, which was one of the concerns about earlier discussions of alignments that go further south and actually went out of Mesa as you go further along. Where we stand right now is that the Federal Highways Administration and ADOT are conducting their environmental analysis of the alignment. We hope to have a decision on the EA before the end of 2009, and shortly thereafter the Federal Highways Administration will issue a record of decision. So we hope to have, by the end, I believe, of 2009, an idea of where this freeway will enter into the US 60 in Pinal County.
And that EA was accelerated too, wasn't it? Well, there were two choices, the EA and what was the other one that would have taken longer?
Mm-hmm. Correct. We were trying to get commitment from ADOT to do it within 2 years. It could have been as quick as 18 months on the EA. It's looking like it's going to be probably the full 2 years. We're putting pressure on them trying to get this done, because that's going to dictate the start of the design. And so we're hoping to start design
the state
in
is
earnest.
To try to accelerate the process as well for this.
They're trying.
Trying.
And we are urging.
The state can.
It's a important project for us, definitely.
Right. Thank you.
But Mayor and Council, wanted to put this project on your radar screen so you know, and it comes in under, again, not a bondable project, but it will impact some of our cash flow as we utilize both our HERF revenues as well as our sales tax revenues to advance that. I'll stop at this point, and if you had any other questions related to projects, police, again, police representatives, fire representatives, transportation, Dan Clevenger can come back up, and if you have any questions about any of the projects that I apologize quickly went through related to the $408.8 million worth of projects.
I have a question for fire, I guess. Getting back to the on page 7, the response map. Chief Beck, I'm assuming that out in West Mesa, that area is currently served by the station 203 there on University, the blue one, and that would be the new coverage for the, I guess, the station, what, 218 is the plan there?
Mayor, the plan in that location is for us to build station 218 at 8th Street and Alma School,
okay,
and to replace station 203 to a location we have not currently purchased property for.
Okay, but that blue is the 28 would be the 218 coverage area.
The north.
That's a basic question, I know.
Yes.
Okay. I guess let me ask you what is an obvious question. Let's say these stations aren't built. Let's say this bond doesn't pass. Where are we then?
Well, we would continue to operate the way we are, at least at this point. Obviously, we would have to take a look at our whole deployment plan, because we're talking about, if the bond was indeed a five-year bond, we're talking about at least 5 to 6 years before we would potentially have a chance to relook at this. So we would have to take a look at our entire deployment model. Currently, we operate both two engine companies out of Station 203, which was built in the 50s.
Okay.
It's very tight quarters. They're also two of the busiest companies we have in this city. Interestingly enough, Engine 203 ran out of there, ran well over almost 4,000 calls for several years. When we put station or engine 218 in that same quarters to run calls out of that same station, station engine 203 still ran over 2,500 calls, and engine 218 also ran approximately 2,500 calls. So that's, in a public safety vernacular, that's kind of a black hole of service demand for us. So that's a critical area.
And at in East Mesa, you currently, whereas in West Mesa, you're doubling up. In East Mesa, those blue areas, we flat out don't have anything out there right now. We're filling in gaps.
That's correct. However, we do own several parcels of property.
Okay.
Some of them are the areas that we would include as a priority, and some of them are not.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions before we move on? Guess not.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. Starting then on page 16, or really page 17, is the financial summaries and how this all gets paid for moving forward. Again, the combined total of the two questions on the ballot would be $408.8 million. They would be broken down. It's, again, a five-year program broken down into five annual bond sales. We typically do those in the April-May time frame. We just recently had a GO bond sale. You can see, again, we've rounded the numbers, but in each fiscal year, what we would sell bonds for to total that $408.8 million. And then, as noted at the bottom, the ballot language currently includes that we would levy a secondary property tax to repay the debt that's incurred by these GO bond sales, and that would begin in 09-10. Should note, many of you know already, that a secondary property tax can be levied up to the amount of the general obligation bond debt that the city has in order to retire that debt on an annual basis. We can't levy a secondary property tax for more than what our GO bond debt is, but we can do it for less. And historically, we have done it for less, a lot less. We haven't levied a secondary property tax. We have other types of bonds, revenue bonds that relate to our utilities. Those you don't levy a property tax on. Those are paid for out of the resources and revenues provided from the sale of those utility services, water, wastewater, electric, natural gas, things of that nature. So again, this secondary property tax relates only to general obligation bond debt. On the next page shows our current general obligation bond debt in a graphical form. Over the next 20 years or so, our current debt would be retired. We have about $256.3 million worth of existing general obligation bond debt, and I should note that that excludes the sale we just had in May. Trying to use the same numbers, this would increase marginally, mostly on the tail end from the sale we had in May.
And that sale amount was 50 plus?
Correct, in that neighborhood for general obligation bond debt. That was predominantly to pay for the police technical services building as well as the new city court building. Should note that, again, there's under this line, there's $256.3 million worth of general obligation bond debt that, under current practices, we would retire using the city's general fund resources. In most every other city, cities would retire this debt using a secondary property tax. The majority or a large percentage of this, about $100 million of that 256, is retired in the years between 09-10 and 13-14. So we have a significant amount, about $26 million a year, that's retired during those 4 years initially. On page 19 is our existing annual debt service payments numerical form. Again, $256.3 million. That's what's currently outstanding, again, excluding the May of 08 sale. On page 20, I included
Excuse
for
me,
you.
Brian.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, go ahead. Mr. Councilmember Richards?
Sure, I'm sorry. I should have noted that. In 2017-2018, if I were to chart our actual debt service, we would have a significant spike to about $30 million. 1 year it goes up and comes back down. That was a debt service payment that was put out there years ago as part of a bond sale that we are unable to refund or refinance at this time. We can't refinance it. And because everything else has been refinanced as part of that package, we cannot refinance it until the year of that debt. And so when we get there, we will do what we call a current year refunding and spread that debt over multiple years.
It's like refinancing your right. mortgage or something.
Correct. Yeah. We do a lot of those. We just did one this past year that netted us about $1.9 million in new resources. But what this one is you cannot do it until you reach the year 2017-2018. And then we would refund it at that point.
What's the risk of that when you get out? What if interest rates are too high? Could it cost us? Downside to the?
Those in these seats in 2017 and 18 can make that analysis. There's options of paying cash. The rates may be high. They maybe could go on a very short term. They could go to a longer term. There's a variety of different options that would be available to them at that time. But what we wanted to do is to show it as a smooth, what we would anticipate, what a refunding would look like with that included in 2017-2018.
But in reality, that number is bigger. But that's the budget
for
plan.
1 year, there's a one-year spike that jumps up to about $30 million.
And Mayor and Councilman Richards, if you'll notice, what we've tried to do throughout, and you'll see in the future, is we're really trying to smooth out the curve on our debt service. That was a huge spike, which, based on this schedule now that you see where Brian's trying to smooth it out, essentially would double the payment in, was it 2017-18. And what happens is if we don't believe that we're going to call it, then that means that we'll have to set aside reserves, significant reserves in our fund balance in anticipation of that spike. And that's what the city's doing now. I mean, today, through both in the general fund and the utility fund, is it anticipation of these higher debt service payments years in advance, it has to set aside significant dollars in reserves in order to be able to pay those. We just think it makes sense, at least right now, we are anticipating that we would be in a position to, it'd probably make more sense to refinance that peak, $30 million. I mean, it's even higher than we're paying today, which now we're paying at almost historical levels, even at this time. So that was kind of the thinking.
And Chris, those reserves, are those our determination, the issuer's determination, or underwriter's determination, or a combination of both, all three?
Yes.
Okay. That clears it up.
It's part of our financial forecasting. As we look out into the future, without the advantage of having another type of dedicated revenue stream for debt, which is typically how most cities do it, we then have to plan for it within the general operating budget. So we have to anticipate that what that debt service is going to be in the future, especially how long ago was it we were out of, when we were in Debt Valley, we refer to it here about 2 years ago,
three years.
So we, in advance of that escalation of debt service, there had to be a lot of planning ahead to start setting aside reserves early on. So by the time we got there, the current revenues were not in a position to absorb that in 1 year. So we had to take multiple years to kind of ramp up the reserves to be able to absorb it. And that's what we're going through now. The city put aside significant contingencies or reserves for the debt service increases years in advance. And that's why sometimes people look at these huge reserves we have in the city. Well, the purpose is to build those up so that the time when the debt service payment comes, we're able to make
it. How many years in advance do you generally reserve?
Well, it depends on how high that's going to be. I don't know, well, Chuck, how many years did you have?
In planning for the peak that we just hit in 2007-08, we planned 3 years ahead.
Okay,
for
so
3 years, we did set aside.
So we'll still plan for that because we don't know whether we're going to be able to refi or not. But we may have actually, if we can refi and even those out, then we have a little bit of play.
You're absolutely correct, because what we do with forecasting revenues and expenditures, then we model all those,
right.
And that shows you exactly where our resources are.
And the mayor, going back to part of your questioning is, certainly our forecast model has been noted, as and we'll show you here in a slide, by our rating agencies, because we can assure them that we're putting aside those dollars, because current revenue streams would not suggest that we would be able to make those payments without dramatic decreases in that particular year. So by showing that we're putting aside reserves.
When you say dramatic decreases in that year,
Well, in that year, for example, I think that 2 years ago it went up how much in 1 year, the debt service amount?
Well, let's just talk the general fund. It went up $22 million.
Yeah, that's what we're talking. I mean, increases in 1 year.
So without that reserve, we'd be looking at massive decreases in current cash flow or current service. We'd have to make.
Think about the general fund itself as an operating fund. Is 330?
Well, what we have for just the operating side of it, 335 million.
So think about 22 million versus 330 million. So
on page 18 is the graphical representation. Page 19 is the actual amounts. Again, assuming that same refunding in 17-18, and excluding the sale in this past May. On page 20. I've included for you a summary that's really prepared by the Arizona Department of Revenue, and this uses 2006-2007 numbers. DOR puts this together. It's an independent third agency evaluation, so our number is different because it's a year earlier than what I previously showed you. But what I wanted,
Councilman Richards, you have a question here.
I should have asked it. Is on slide page 19? Mm-hmm. Are these numbers including the 408?
No, they are current. This is what we currently have out there outstanding and need to repay.
And actually, these are low because they don't include the $51 million that we just sold two, 3 weeks ago.
But we will also have we'll retire some debt July 2nd, and we'll have
it all adjusted. So the difference is minimal.
Right. Gotcha. And you'll see one, Councilmember Richens, here in a minute that starts to combine them all. We're going to kind of do this in stair steps. Again, on page 20 is a representation done by the Arizona Department of Revenue and use them. They do this annually. Again, the numbers are from 06-07, so our number at 226 is lower because we had a sale in 07-08. But it's a great explanation or a great representation here of the way our GO bond debt per resident compares to the other major valley cities that we always compare ourselves to. You will see us in a variety of situations compare ourselves to these six other major valley cities. Typically, we come the closest, whether it's homeowner cost surveys or whatever, to Gilbert. They have a similar revenue structure, similar to ours. But you can see that we're the next to the lowest on general obligation bond debt. And when you look at Gilbert and us together, we're less than half of the next closest person in terms of general obligation bond debt per resident. And the percentage of our bond debt utilized is very, very low.
Now, Ryan, you said Gilbert has a similar revenue source. They do not have a primary property tax, but they do have a secondary.
They do have, correct, sir.
Okay,
they do.
So they are paying back their GO debt with secondary
property tax.
And this number doesn't include, they had a recent bond sale. fairly significant.
Correct.
So that would
this, again, this is based on 06, 07. Right. As we see the Department of Revenue put these numbers together, in future we'll bring them back to you.
Councilmember Summers?
I was going to say, I threw back here the information you had from about a year ago, and they looked like they retired about $12 million in debt, but then they had the bond sale. So this is not the current number. That number is going to go up.
Right.
In another comment, while we're similar to Gilbert in how we finance ourselves, we are dissimilar in size, population, infrastructure, number of miles of streets, number of fire stations, et cetera. So using somebody we're a little bit more closely aligned to, who would that be?
Well, Mayor and Councilman Summers, I think the challenge, you know, everybody likes to compare us to all the peer cities, and we're going to see that again in a few weeks. I think that's an interesting analogy, but when you're a city of 450,000, 460,000 versus 200,000, I can just tell you from experience, it's a very different league. As well as, if you want to look at the history of Mesa, as the mayor covered so well in his inaugural speech, we have a very long history that's been developed out for a long period of time. Our challenges are a little different than some of the more recent communities that have really exploded over the last decade or so. So really, if you look at it in our conversations, where we really share information a lot is with Phoenix, because they have a lot of high urban cores where they may have some older neighborhoods that are working on infill development and challenges there. Because our GO bonds have to recognize, as we just talked about in the fire services, how do you deal with a west side, which has a challenge more from the demand for the number of calls for service versus the east side, whose demand is, or whose challenge is, as much growing calls for service, but really it's the extended runs, the distance of the runs for service because of the growth and the pattern. So really we, frankly, from my perspective, is we kind of look more to a Phoenix and other larger metropolitan cities in a comparison of debt service. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's just kind of how I look at it generally.
And again, we've included this to show, I get the question oftentimes about the amount of our debt, but what I tried to do here is put it into perspective about the comparative amount of debt is very low by comparison to the other Valley cities. And again, we look specifically at general obligation bond debt because that is what is retired using our general fund resources. There is significant bond debt out there for our utility operations, but those are supported by our utility operations and the monthly payments that we get on our water, gas, and wastewater services.
And I think maybe what you need to look at, what you're saying is that the utilities are basically, I know we don't like to use this term, but they're businesses within the city, and the debt is related to those business operations, which are paid back through the revenues that are generated from selling gallons of water and units of electricity and those kind of things, whereas our general obligation are what I would call service issues, fire, police, streets, those things, which are pure city service type things.
Correct, sir. Okay. Very good. Thank you. On page 21, just wanted to outline a couple of things related to that bond debt. And just we went through every time we sell bonds, every spring when we're in the market, and the mayor will participate in these in next spring, in our rating calls to our rating agencies. They look at us and they evaluate our financial strengths and our weaknesses. We were upgraded this year in terms of our bonds by one of the rating agencies. And just wanted to include a couple of the comments that were out there related to our GO bond debt as well as our financial management that were done just recently within the last 30 days by those two rating agencies. I won't read them, but they're there for your analysis, and I can provide you with a full analysis that were both done by Moody's and Standard & Poor's if you're so interested. Stair-stepping through the process here.
Councilmember Summers.
It's something I caught on to, including overall debt levels are low, is one of the quotes. You flip back, you look at Tempe, Glendale, they have pretty high debts, even Phoenix, somewhere between almost 50 to 70%. How are their bond ratings holding up with that high debt?
They would be higher than ours.
Their ratings are higher because there's a variety of ratios that are looked at. One of the more significant ones will be also your ability to pay back the bonds. So they're going to look at their total assessed valuation as a community versus
higher their meaning better from a finance
higher value of improvements.
Yeah. The ratings, meaning when we say a higher rating,
but they'll look at the the value, the assessed valuation of Scottsdale from a dollar perspective upon which the rate will be levied, and that helps them say, wow, you've got a huge capacity to pay off these bonds. And so that will factor or maybe mitigate against some of these other issues. But, you know, I think we'll see later, Brian, you'll show the tax rates, too, for these properties.
Well, I'm using Tempe because they're the highest, 69%. That 69%, their GO bond, doesn't that take into account their capacity to pay it back?
Their capacity to levy
the debt. Their capacity to pay it back is really related to their rating by the rating agencies, and they would be a AAA, I believe.
Okay, and to what extent does their financial setup, having the secondary, how much does that play in at all?
Their secondary would offset their general obligation bond debts either fully or to a great extent. They also have a primary property tax, which is, again, is another thing that the rating agencies look at in terms of stability of revenue sources that are constant,
and that
are out there, that are not
too
subject to dramatic fluctuations due to economic cycles.
Yeah, we're getting fairly technical. So for the listening audience, what we're talking about is the debt limit. In the state of Arizona, we have statutory limits as to how much general obligation debt, depending on the type of debt, you can issue in relation to the assessed valuation of the properties within your city.
Correct.
Would that be an accurate and easy statement? And that's what we're talking about.
That's
so as a comparison, if we took the debt, the $226 million that we have outstanding, that represents 28.2% of the amount we could issue under state-mandated limits versus Tempe, for example, based on our assessed valuation, and Tempe, with their $360 million, they've eaten up 69% of what is available under state law in relation to their assessed valuation.
Correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure because we're getting fairly technical there.
Thank you.
And you have to rein Chuck and I in. We do
minded.
That a lot.
I got
to
step back.
Chuck and I will go there fast if you don't stop us. Starting on page 22 is really based on, there's a state law that when you put together a publicity pamphlet, you have to project the assessed valuations for all your properties out there throughout the city. Applying that state law to our historical assessed valuation increases, you see the graph on page 22, which starts in 09-10, that about $5.6 billion or so is the secondary assessed valuations for all property in Mesa, and then estimated from there. These estimates are then utilized to formulate property tax rates, if you will. On page 23 is the numerical representation of that. And then for just perspective purposes, on page 24, I have put the fiscal year, our current existing debt, which was the $256 million, and then if we were to charge a secondary property tax today, here's what the rates would be under the program that's outlined on the ballot currently. And that rate would average over the 24-year period approximately 13.5 cents.
Per year,
$1,000 of assessed valuation.
For $1,000 assessed valuation.
Right, 13 cents. So what it is, it's a combination of the secondary assessed valuation of the individual's property, the debt service that we have out there, and then that generates a tax rate.
Okay, let's be clear, as I understand this. This is taking our existing debt, if we were to have one in place right now that covered all of the existing debt, this is what it would be. We don't have that tax now, so right now it's zero.
Correct.
Okay. This is not what it will be if we choose to continue with the existing language and implement a secondary property tax with this new bond issue. These numbers do not relate to the proposed bond issue.
They do not relate.
It's a what if, as if kind
right.
of a.
This is just scenario. For a perspective purpose. We've shown you the graph previously on page 18 that said, here's our graph of our current debt. Here's what the property tax would be if we had one currently on that. Just to add that if I did a quick analysis that somebody said, well, what's the impact of the May sale, the $50 million May sale? And that would increase by an average of 1 cent. So it would go from 13 to approximately 14 cents, just for, again, for perspective purposes.
And then we're retiring some debt shortly. So then
And that's why you see these declines.
And Mayor and Council, let's be careful again. We're using the word average.
Right.
We're not using the word actual. So if you said average, that doesn't allow you to really, it only allows you, you can see in the early years, you wouldn't be paying back all of the outstanding debt with that 13-cent rate.
Correct.
It's just the average over
the life.
Whatever, the life.
Over the life.
33.
Life.
Right.
And to play the what if, we're actually looking at a rate, what would be next year, of 50 cents per hundred.
Correct.
And on a $250,000 house, $125?
By $100,000 increments, that's how I like to do it, because it makes it easier.
$100,000
increment, that's $50. Right. So for every $100,000 increment, that's $50.
And we'll get there.
Yeah.
You're reading.
So I just wanted to give you this for perspective. Again, we're talking to averages. We've tried to present it in terms of how it would be presented by state law in the publicity pamphlet. On page 25, and this gets back to Councilmember Richin's comment about what does the new debt service look like for the $408.8 million. This is the way you'd have five sales, which is the ramp-up period. You would have several years of level debt, and then it would start, each of those sales would come off after their 20-year life expires. So for just the $408 million, on page 26, we've now said, here's what our debt service would be. We apply the secondary assessed valuation, and here's what the average rate would be just for the $408.8 million. Not the previous 256 that we talked about that is existing today. Just the new package is an average rate of 28.37 cents or $0.2837. So that's for the $408 million. I'm going to move to the next one, which is now just for representation, graphical representation purposes, of what happens when you combine those two debt service schedules and what do they look like and how do we level out. And again, as Chris noted, we're trying to level out our debt over time to make it more predictable as we move forward. Page 28. Kind of goes back to Councilmember Richin's question of, how does this tax rate relate to a homeowner or a business owner? So what I've done is given you two tables. One is at the top is the assessed cash value, the secondary assessed valuation. If, for instance, the assessed valuation was $100,000 on a piece of property and you had a 25-cent rate, that would cost that property owner of $100,000, a residential property owner, I should add, $25 a year. And I should note that it's, as a property tax, it's also a tax deductible on people that itemize their tax returns.
Federal and state? Federal and state deductible?
In terms of revenues, I put the table at the bottom. In terms of revenues, what would that same 25-cent rate generate in 910 with our assessed valuation? It would generate $13.5 million. So if you follow, that just kind of gives you an assessment of what would it cost for a homeowner and what would those amounts generate at each of the various stages. And I put at the bottom a comparison that our initial thoughts for this year is that our quarter cent quality of life sales tax would generate nearly $25 million, which is approximately the 50 cent secondary property tax rate, just to kind of give you that.
Which is about where we would be right now if we had a secondary property tax, according to your schedule.
Correct.
On all of our existing debt.
Right.
Okay.
Correct, sir. As I mentioned early in the presentation, and sorry, this is where it gets maybe a little confusing, is that some of the projects...
Now starts to get confusing? Boy, I'm glad we weren't confused before.
More confusing. Many of the public safety projects have O&M, operations and maintenance costs related to them. Chief Beck talked about adding new fire stations. There's a communications facility. There's an arraignment court facility. All of those require staffing. Our current forecasting models do not have the funds to expand those staffing levels. So while we would levy bonds to build those stations, we do not, under our current financial structure, have the money to operate those stations. What that would require us to do, and those operational costs are about $10.5 million in 12-13 and increasing onward, and that's shown on page 30, what those operational costs look like at a graphical representation. What that would require us to do would be, in order to pay this amount, the concept is that we would utilize and levy a secondary property tax on existing general obligation bond debt. Going back to the $256 million, we would levy a property tax on a portion of that amount to offset these operating needs for public safety. We would levy that debt. Again, it's the ability and the authority of council to be able to do that to the extent that it would pay these costs moving forward. That's identified on page 31, that we could offset much of those costs with a property tax. And what we would do is we would levy a property tax on existing debt. We would then utilize the money that is freed up in our general fund to fund the fire stations, the communications facility, the arraignment center, and things of that nature. The personnel costs and the operational costs related to those new facilities.
Councilmember Richens and then Councilman Summers.
Just had a quick question. Are the residential rates and the commercial rates for secondary property tax, would they be the same?
They would not.
The rates are the same.
The classification is different. Residential is done on 10%, and by the time we start initiating this program, commercial industrial is 20%. It's double.
Well, we're jumping technically again. Let's get a little more basic so people can understand. We're talking about the value, right? The full cash value and what ends up on their tax bill and what percentage of that is actually used to apply the tax rate.
Correct.
And commercial properties generally have a higher percentage, right, of their full cash, or I'm using value now, evaluation, than homeowners do, than residences do.
Okay.
So it's the same rate, but at a different dollar.
The assessment ratio is double for, it used to be 0.25, it's now going to be, it's moved down to 0.20.
Well, let's use an example. Let's say we had a house that was valued at $200,000 and a business that was handled at $200,000. You would apply the same rate, let's say it's that 50-cent rate, mm-hmm, but for calculating that rate, you would use
$20,000
for the house, and you'd use
$40,000
for the business. So you take the same $200,000 valuation, but then you'd adjust it by a percentage.
And who determines those two? Well, is that a statutory?
And it's all done by the county assessor's office.
And how would like rental real estate be? Is it the same as residential?
It
all depends.
Yeah, if like I own a rental home or a rental apartment or something.
I think there's, and I need to brush up on this, I believe there's 9 classifications,
right,
under the law. So we'd have to go through each of, I mean, if you have specific questions on specific classifications, we can calculate it. But there's different percentages for every one.
Based on the statutory.
Well, as you can understand, there's a lot of rental properties out there that happen to be listed on the tax rolls as primary residences for obvious reasons.
Gotcha.
Okay. The one thing I didn't bring was the 9 classifications.
Councilmember Summers.
Let's step back here a little bit. Brian, what we're talking about, just to remind people, is we're going to look at selling of bonds. We don't know quite what that package is going to be when we're done with it. But in order to operate that, we do not have the money in growth of sales tax revenue, state shared revenues, etc., to pay for the operation and maintenance of those facilities. In order to pay for that, we are considering assessing a secondary rate for secondary property tax slightly above the amount necessary to build that infrastructure to pay back old bond debt. Secondary, and this is where we get into this difference. We just had a property tax vote 2 years ago. That failed, but that was a primary property tax. So now we get into this question between primary and secondary. A primary property tax, which is what we rejected 2 years ago, continues in perpetuity and can go to anything. It goes to the general fund, which pays for firefighters, police officers, or anything the council decides on. A secondary property tax can only go to repay bond debt.
General obligation.
General obligation bond debt. So when we look at this $233 million, what we would be doing is paying back that old bond debt to relieve the general fund of the burden of paying that, so that we can pay for the police officers, firefighters, and what we need. Okay.
Correct.
Now we have that. Because it can only go, because the secondary property tax can only go to repay bond debt. Our bond debt as currently exists, and we're talking about the currently existing bond debt. I'm getting smiles. I hope we're getting this and not, huh? In 2027, 2028, the current bond debt expires. So, how do we pay for the police officers, the firefighters, et cetera, after 2027, 2028, if this bond passes?
Let's skip to page 32. And this is Chuck's got it up on the screen.
I am way ahead of you.
Okay.
Okay, I'm one page ahead.
All right. So, on your screen, I think it's the pink line is our current existing bond debt, which you just said expires in 27, 28. The yellow line is the requirements for operating expenses related to public safety as outlined in the current program. The top line, the black line, is our overall combined bond debt. What we would say is that we would levy a tax that's in the shaded area or the yellow area at the bottom, necessary to offset those expenses related to the operation of public safety, until such time as you can see in about 21, I think this is what I'm getting to your question, uh-huh. Councilmember Summers, in 21, 22, we start at a deficit. We do not have enough authority under our current. Chuck can speak a little bit about his forecast and what's that showing.
Well, this is where the beauty of modeling comes in, because what it does is require us to practice discipline in restricting expenditures so that you start building your revenue stream in the general fund, restricting your general fund expenditures necessary to sustain that out into the future. So you're really now making a plan and making a commitment to the public safety side that in the future we've got to set aside revenues from the general fund to sustain it out into the future, starting in 2021.
Well, back to what you said earlier, but how can we assure that the people that are sitting in those seats in 10 years from now are going to have that same discipline? I mean, isn't that sort of one of the allegedly reasons why we're found ourselves in these debt valley and everything, that people planned one time and then there was a change or there was an adjustment or whatever and it was laid off to a future council? I mean, how can we assure that our plans today and obligating today will be respected and the discipline will be followed in future years?
Well, that's your job.
Yeah. Mayor and Council, I think this sounds very familiar. From previous councils, that's the thought about why we have the forecast and we make that an integral part of the budget process. No council can bind future councils. It's just not allowed. But what we do is when we talk about financing the city and budgeting, we don't talk about it in just what's happening next year, but we try to look at it from a longer term perspective. Beyond that, there really is no restrictive obligations that we can create other than to suggest that at some point, before that 2021 period of time, backing up a period of, 5 or 6 years, we begin identifying what those needs are. We have to look at the general fund and see if there's going to be what the economics are at that point, and what's the economy doing, and how much of this can be absorbed, or what will the absorption be in the general fund at that period of time. Absorbing at that period of time, it'll be over
$13 million
in recurring expenses. So it's not a matter of let's go sell more land in Pinal County. That's not the answer, because you'd have to sell $13 million worth of land every year for the life of that fireman and police officer in perpetuity. So we would have to look at our general fund revenue base and begin to identify that growth and hold expenditures early on in order to create the capacity in the budget to absorb those, out into the future. The good news is if we make that decision now, we have 10 years to begin building that into the modeling, and we would have to identify that in our budget, maybe each year incrementally kind of building that into the base and identifying that so that by the time we got to 2021, That would be already identified early on, and we could see the growth in the base. But it takes the discipline. The hard thing is that previous decade of council members who are going to be pressed for other, you know, additional public safety issues is not to use those funds for other projects. So the forecasting, modeling, and bringing that and buying that in is really the best answer I can give at this point.
Yeah, and I guess what I'd like to be very careful of as I'm looking at this is while we can't bind future councils, in a sense, we are binding a future council because we're, just like we're dealing with a situation that was decided upon 10 and 15 years ago, I want to be very careful that we understand that the decision we make on this bond issue and the plan, because this is, I don't remember this scenario coming up or being talked about in as much detail as we are now. We are really, in a sense, setting a stage to where we are binding future because we're creating this model that does go out. So I need to consider that as we're going forward. Any question, Councilmember? Councilmember Summers?
Okay. I just tie into the rest of the question. When we look at projecting our future growth and revenues, there's no way really to model economic growth from Gateway Region or currently undeveloped lands in East Mesa. We don't know how that's going to develop out for producing revenue through sales tax or what have not. Is that true?
Well, what we do in the forecast is we take all the current income streams and we project them against our econometrics of what we get in our current long-term forecast. I don't want to get too technical. We belong to the U of A. They use Global Insight Econometrics. So that changes. We look at it on a quarterly basis when we get those fresh numbers, and each fall we get the long range. So we're using those numbers to take us out into the future and then looking at it against our growth, City of Mesa growth.
But again, it's based on our growth. It's, you know, we don't know the nuances of everything that'll happen in the Southeast Valley that'll affect that positively or negatively. We can only assume what we do know at this point.
So you're saying it does depend on the number of houses that are in the Gateway.
I was thinking the number of businesses that locate.
Okay, we got you. Councilmember Higgins.
I just want to. You said levy a tax. We are talking about levying a secondary property tax to free up general operating funds to operate all this other stuff.
Correct.
Okay.
It frees up, yeah, because you can't levy the tax to fund the operations. You have to levy the tax to pay the debt, and then that frees up our general operating.
And that's what creates the problem in 2021, because you're now starting to decrease that available money from that debt service source, and that's where you get the squeeze.
I just want to say one more thing. I brought this up because we have to look at it as part of the modeling, and we also have to realize the impact of the decisions we make for the future. That doesn't change the criticalness of the need for fire stations, increased police officers, roads for economic development. That doesn't change. These things have to be built at some point, but there is an impact in the future that we're going to feel. I think this balance will probably be picked up if we do growth right and we attract a lot of good residences, the proper type, you know, Tempe, and the right type of businesses in the right area, then we're going to see a lot of that sales tax revenue and other revenues coming into the city as well to help pay for these costs. But still, I want to be very careful that we still need this public safety and economic development, or I consider roads a bit of economic development, items. Okay. They're not, it's almost not negotiable. So, thank you.
Mayor Smith, people typically want to put this into perspective of a rate. What does that rate mean? So in the yellow, really, that is an average rate of approximately 8 cents. That would be over the 24-year life of this program. That would be the operational expenditure offset, if you will, for operating all those facilities. It equates to about an 8-cent rate. On the next page,
Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you. The question is, the bonding or that money is just to repay, to get enough cash to operate the things we are bonding for now. Not like, well, we could take a couple more percent and take care of like the police and fire in its entirety, to pay off, you know, have enough free cash available by paying off more bond debt? You get that question. Do you want me to clear
that? That authority, this is just to pay off what's in the program,
right,
to operate what's in the program, if you will, about 8 cents. The issue becomes then is the council always has the authority to levy a secondary property tax up to our current general obligation bond debt amount, which would be up to the
pink line
in on your slide.
If you'll
but
go.
We're not proposing that at this
right.
point.
So the really the gap where Brian's on slide 32, if you see at the beginning of 910, the gap between the yellow and the pink line, that gray area, that's what's
not levied.
Not levied, that could be levied on a secondary property tax. The problem is you can see it's a very short-term opportunity, because if you move forward with the personnel that we have to fund for the capital projects that are being proposed, they're going to eat up a fairly significant portion of that. And so that, I guess, shape there between the pink line and the yellow, you can see it's only good for, what, 4 years or so? And that becomes, you know, it's only available for that period of time, and then the rest of it's absorbed into the existing, or the proposed program. So, you know, what could you do with that for 4 years? I mean, there's obviously projects, but it's not a recurring opportunity, I guess that's the way to say it.
Yeah. Yes, Ms. Summers?
And this goes back to fiscal discipline. We start, we go, whoopee, we have $27 million worth of money that we can spend if we implement the secondary property tax and start this ridiculous spending spree, then that line, that pink line with the yellow in it, shortens. And all of a sudden, in 4 years, instead of 10, we're facing a problem, and it doesn't give growth an opportunity to absorb those costs. So to go out and implement that, and this is your point, so I'm not changing anything, to go out and start spending that money on anything other than what we're looking to improve our public safety and our roads would be just foolhardy.
Yeah, committing, it's about over $70 million in that pie-shaped wedge that Chris was referring to, and Chuck is circling on the screen. To commit that to a long-term operating expense gets to the exact issue that Councilmember Summers identifies. So I just want to put that into perspective. That's about an 8 cent impact. What I've done on page 33 then is combined the new election, $408.8 million, the operating offset for public safety, and the rate would be 36 cents, a slightly over 36 cents secondary property tax rate.
Brian, but let's be careful. That's the average rate, right? Not the max rate.
The average rate.
Because there could be a rate that would be levied that could be higher than that during the period.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like the top one is about 50.
Yeah,
over
so we need to be
cents.
Careful about how we.
And as
it.
We would structure these sales, Mayor, over time, we would try to structure the sales predicting future assessed values to get those rates so they every year they wouldn't fluctuate up and down. They would be fairly constant. That they would be within 1 or 2 cents, or they would be a constant amount.
Which is an interesting thing, because explain something or clarify something. Since a secondary rate or a secondary tax is based on debt obligations, in other words, and those are pretty well fixed, mm-hmm. based on the contract or the issuance of the debt. As assessed valuation goes up, as the city grows, assuming the debt stays the same, the tax rate would therefore then go down, because you can only collect the amount of tax necessary to pay that the debt obligation, which is a fixed amount.
That's correct.
Unlike a primary property tax, which is basically a fixed rate, and so the revenue fluctuates. As assessed valuation goes up, what normally happens, and unless you lower the rate, the revenue would go up. This one, the revenue or the expense or whatever you, however you want to do it, is a fixed amount. Therefore, the tax rate would go down, and the obligation for each homeowner would adjust proportionately. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Mayor, I think, Brian, you've kind of built in an assumption of some growth in the assessed valuation.
Yes, we've used the state law to build in this, in whether it follows that, but that's, again, and we've tried to present this as it would be presented in the publicity
right.
pamphlet, and that's what they refer to, the average rate and things of that nature. So I'm going to go to a graphic representation.
Hey, Brian, I'm going to confuse things a little more. you probably have it in here about road, street, O&M, and
Is that covered by our ongoing quality of life and the
correct?
And the
we would not. We've not assumed any additional okay. funds because that would grow. Hopefully someday right. sales tax will come back. It'll grow with the sales tax that's being collected for.
And we have a dedicated sales tax right. to cover that yes, that correct. Issue. All right.
And just to reassure you, in the financial modeling that we've done, any O&M associated with that's already been absorbed in our models.
Okay. I just want to clarify that for everybody.
But there, Mayor, you mentioned quality of life, maybe just in passing. But streets does there's nothing.
I'm sorry, I meant okay. the point three.
Right.
Okay. The point three, not the quality of life. Sorry, my slip.
So on page 34. The average rate that I spoke to, about 36 cents previously, is what is depicted in the blue areas and the yellow areas. In combination, that levy averages 36 cents over the 24-year period. What does that mean to the homeowner or the business commercial user? An average rate, 36 cents, with a secondary assessed valuation on the residence, and that may not be what somebody could sell their house for. It's what the county has said is their assessed valuation. $100,000, $36.42 annually. Again, $250,000 residence, $90 annually. If you had a $2.5 million commercial or industrial facility, again, back to the assessment ratios that Councilmember Richens spoke of, that rate would be, or that amount would be about $1,800 annually. So that's the impact.
Yeah, Councilmember Hankins.
Most other cities in the area have some type of property tax. So like this secondary property tax wouldn't put us at a disadvantage for attracting other jobs, companies.
Mayor Smith, Councilmember Higgins, next slide.
Hey, you are always just one step ahead of us, aren't you?
One behind, it looks like.
It seems like you've done this a couple times. Councilmember Summers?
Brian, we'll go with Brian. There's some agencies like SRP that have. Are you okay? That have facilities in Mesa that are not subject to a property tax, but are instead in lieu. Is it SRP? Or are they going to pay it in lieu? You don't want to go there yet.
I don't want to talk about
okay,
that right
next
now.
Issue.
Next issue.
Don't
let me talk.
On page 36 is really a local comparison of all the tax rates. Not only our retail tax rate that's out there against the same six Valley cities that we spoke of earlier, but also the property tax rates, both primary. This is one we had the election on several years ago that failed, as well as the secondary. And as you can see, all the other major Valley cities, and even if I were to go down to Peoria, and some of the smaller cities like that, they would also have a secondary property tax. And while on the previous page we've said the rate would be 36 cents, the average rate for these Valley cities is 94 cents there at the bottom on the secondary basis. So just wanted to give you that perspective. Also put in this one, just for your own individual knowledge, is that we look at our operating budget and look at the operating budget per residence. And you can see that we're the lowest, again, at 2222 in terms of operating budget per resident. Again, we talk about our low GO bond debt per ratios, our operating debt per ratios. Again, I think it's a very efficient operation. And that operating resource there is a good number. I mean, we've been low historically, and we will continue to stay low. Again, the issue for us as we go forward is the zeros in our secondary property tax. We are, this year, will commit over $27 million of general fund resources and not have anything plugged in there where normal Valley cities as well as normal cities nationwide would have a number plugged in.
Councilmember Summers?
Brian, on the on that slide 36 in the operating budget per resident, is that apples to apples? That is, our budget, and it gets put in the paper a lot, roughly $1.2 billion. But that includes a number of enterprise funds like our utilities that other cities don't operate. So our budget looks high comparatively, where actually our operating budget, that O&M budget, is much smaller.
Yeah, you get into very problematic issues when you start comparing operating budget. This operating budget just takes off what would be bond proceeds, what they're collecting on their bond sales each year. And the reason it gets problematic, Phoenix operates a huge Sky Harbor. So theirs is in that operating budget. We operate more utilities than other areas. So we've just gone on a dollar for dollar what our operating budget is, excluding bond proceeds, and here's what we give our residents bang for the buck. So to your point, Councilmember Summers, we would be even more economical when you start taking out the cost associated right. with the utilities.
So to your point, Mayor and Council, Chuck, is what I think Chuck is trying to say is in our number includes the operating budget for the electric utility, for example.
Absolutely.
I don't know of any other city in the Valley that includes that. It includes a for a gas franchise. So that, but we've included it. We just stripped out the capital of the budget, but this is operating. So if you start pulling those out, and you start pulling it out of that $1 billion budget, the way I like to talk about it is the general fund. And even sometimes that can get a little dicey, but the general fund is kind of typically how we compare ourselves. So even as low as we are, we're actually probably a lot lower when you start really taking out other comparisons.
All right.
So, Councilmember Higgins, did that answer your question previously?
Sure.
Okay. it's on the average rate is how would that compare? Just wanted on 37 and 38 to show for you how there's two issues here. On 37 is there's two questions right now that are on the ballot. Question one would be the public safety bonds for $178.2 million. Question two would be the street bonds for $230.6 million. Some of the question is why in November? And there's been a state law change, and I've listed it at the bottom of why now anything that relates to a secondary property tax or the imposition of secondary property tax has to be that Tuesday in November. On page 38, I'm sorry.
Councilmember Fenter?
Question. Say this weren't to go in this November, when would be the next cycle that this could be addressed?
General election 2 years.
I'd turn it to Linda on or Debbie on that one, whether it's the next November or whether it's the next general election cycle.
I believe that by statute they have to be held in November.
Right.
So it could be 09, 10, 11, any year. It doesn't have to coincide with a general election.
That's correct.
Okay. The issue becomes, Mayor Smith, Councilmember Fenter, is if we do it in 09, the full election cost would be related to bonds.
Right.
Where if you do it in 8 or 10, you have some, or, I'm sorry, we passed, we won't make 8, or in 8, there are elections going on.
Right.
And in 10, there'll be council
elections. Another line item on the ballot versus the ballot.
Being the full cost related to this.
And as a follow-up, maybe for Linda, what would the cost then to run a general election like this in the city of Mesa? Do we have a rough estimate?
Right now, Councilmember Fenter, what we've estimated, if we go ahead and we consolidate with the county this November, we're talking approximately $140,000. If we do a standalone, we're not consolidated, probably more around $300,000.
I have a question for Ms. Spinner. If we change, let's say we adjust this, are we changing just the what do we have to change? Can we change wording or can we just change dollar amounts as far as the question format? Does that make sense?
I think, but if I don't answer your question, please let me know.
Well, let me re-ask it.
Okay.
If we're to come back and let's say that we have two choices, as I understand it. We can either accept this, formally accept this proposal as presented without any changes.
Correct.
If this council decides to change this or adjust this, what can we change? Everything, nothing, or everything, or just the dollar amount?
If you change it out, you can change anything. But
so I know that there's statutory things as far as the question.
Right. There's statutory requirements with regard to the language. So we would have to, I guess I would want to know what would you like to change, and then I can tell you if that's a statutory requirement. But you also have to identify which projects. So if you change the dollar amount, you're going to be asked to identify okay. which projects are being added in or taken out.
Okay.
And I should add, Mayor Smith, that in the question format is included on page 38, and it's really is currently the same for both. And we don't, although we need to know what projects are in, our question does not speak specifically to,
right.
let's say, Fire Station 203, 218, 219. It'll just say fire stations. It'll say land, it'll say equipment, things of that nature. It'll be general nature. It won't speak to each of the, each question does not speak individually to the intersections to be improved. Those are supplemental and available resources that are available to the voters to know in publicity and other information that'll be distributed of what they're for, but it's not on the ballot question.
Just to cut to the chase, I'm looking at the last sentence in the question, and I think that when we talk about the issuance of these bonds will result in an annual levy, in this question right now, it is going. Well, whereas in previous elections, the authority to levy a tax has always been made available to a council. This one, we're absolutely stating that as part of the question, it will be implemented.
There has been a change. I'm sorry.
Is this language different than it has been in the past?
In the past, it is typically said these bonds may result in the annual levy.
That's what I thought.
The will to a may, basically. But
the statute has been changed. So the statute now gives two options with regard to this sentence. And one option is if the bond authorization and the principal and the interest will be paid by the levy of a property tax, the ballot shall contain the phrase, the issuance of these bonds will result in an annual levy of property taxes sufficient to pay the debt on the bonds. Option number two is, if the governing body intends to use revenues other than property taxes to pay the debt on the proposed GO bonds, the ballot shall contain the phrase, the issuance of these bonds will result in an annual levy of property taxes sufficient to pay the debt on the bonds unless the governing body provides for payment from other sources. So either way, you have to include that language. The only option is if you want to try to use operating expenses, you can put after this language, comma, unless the governing body provides for the payment from other sources.
Okay, thank you.
I also noted at the top of this slide, and Linda can speak probably more to it than I, is due to the length of the November ballot, that's going to be the presidential ballot, the congressional, state, everything else, we may, and it's undetermined yet, I believe, we may only see on the ballot itself a tagline that refers to question one. It would not be the full ballot language, but that would be posted in the voter booth, the full ballot language, but that's what the referral is to taglines at the top. Linda can clarify.
I've spoken with the county, and before they've limited us to approximately 20 words, but there is a statute that said it should be no more than 50 words. So at this point in time, they're saying they believe we can have 50 words. It's a tagline that'll give the brief description, but with bonds, that'll almost get everything in there we need.
Any questions, comments? I have included at the very back the full listing in the two pages. Again, it's the same information you got in your packet, but the summary of the projects. Answer any questions. And as always, Chuck and I are available for follow-ups, information, questions, conferences, whatever you need.
Okay, Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, Brian, this is a question that I thought of after we skipped the last page. But on the road projects, the street projects, how do you come up with those? What team of people say these are areas? Are there statistics? Is there information, or do you just kind of, this is what we...
Dan Clevenger, our transportation director, can go to that.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, these projects came about, and I've got a copy of it over here. It comes from our transportation plan, which was started to be developed. It was an update in 2000. It was finished in 2002, adopted by council. So that identified our build-out needs for year 2025, assuming a population of, I think, 636,000 and X number of jobs. So we identified our shortcomings and our needs throughout the city. I think there was probably something on the order of 20 intersection projects, 170, 180 miles of improvements needed over those 20 years. And so what we did is we submitted those to MAG when there was consideration for this county tax, the regional funding from Prop 400, and many of them were accepted, and they were built out in the 20 years in the four phases. Chuck alluded to it before. Many of those projects got put in the third and fourth of the four phases, and we couldn't functionally construct all those at the end. We brought several projects forward, 10 I believe, and accelerated those projects, but they're based on projected traffic volumes, congestion issues, and things like that. We've also looked at safety issues now, so we've done an analysis on traffic safety and accident history to identify the higher priority projects. So We're moving those forward. This, again, and we haven't talked too much about it, but this is a five-year plan that the for the street side, the $230.6 million. It's for 5 years of capital projects, and they're split out into two groups. We have 29 regional transportation plan projects. That's the Prop 400. There's another 17 projects, which are standalone capital improvement projects, if you will. Many of them are for ITS, or intelligent transportation system. That's our traffic signal system. And there's, you know, another within that category, we have something like the ASU Ring Road. We have a Broadway Road improvement where we have drainage problems and safety issues related to that street when it rains. But so there's 29 projects on the RTP and 17 others for a total of 46 projects. That's where they came from.
Now, Mayor, Council, Dan, and we could maybe provide this in the future, but one of the ways that we, from a prioritization standpoint, these are not in any priority here, but if you recall, there was a slide earlier where Brian showed, if you would, the expected needs for the bond program over the 5 years. And we then have also taken, and for each year, have identified different phases of projects and projects over that five-year program, whether it's in the public safety component or whether it's in the streets. So speaking specifically to streets, how did Dan, you know, to decide, okay, which projects need to go first? And we had a variety of criteria, and Dan can help me out, but I know some of the projects that are on this list that we identified to do early were projects such as Gilbert and University, where the city has already spent significant amount of dollars for right-of-way acquisition and doing design. So we identified those types of projects where we've already committed resources that are sitting there, or the plans are sitting there to go ahead and move those projects forward. Other projects that were identified in the list tied directly to economic development opportunities, specifically around the Gateway Airport, where we identified Hawes Road, Ray Road, the ASU Ring Road, things like that. So we've in our project, I don't know if we have a cash flow schedule here, we've identified priorities by looking at those elements, and that helped us kind of place them early on in the project. If there are projects here that were not necessarily in the regional transportation program but were needed, but we had not really done any work as far as design or preliminary engineering, those may have slid further to the back of the program, so that would give us time to do that work and time to complete it.
Any other comments, Councilmember Summers?
Chris, have you, some of the discussion that's floated around is about breaking this up, perhaps doing a two-year bond, following that with a three-year bond, depending on how the economy goes. Add some flexibility. Have we given any consideration in all three of these areas, police, fire, and streets, to what projects we would do in the first 2 years, and whether those projects we would be able to complete those projects in 2 years, so that if we decide 2 years from now that it's not time for another bond, we're not left with the proverbial hole in the middle of Gilbert Road because the project was supposed to be funded over 5 years and was only funded for two. So have staff had an opportunity to look at this and figure out which projects?
Yes, let me just explain. I think we just had the discussion about when we can have elections. And our next, you know, outside of bond election, there will be another council election in 2010. So there is some thinking that if the, and the concern about the economy and the size of the bond, we could maybe logically break this up to a two-year program. And what that would allow us to do is to do some of the very critical projects in the two-year period, fund those for a two-year period. But then it would allow us, this council, to relook at the balance of those projects and maybe other projects, but also kind of shooting for a 2010 election, which then would help. We're already going to hold an election anyway for three of the six districts, and so there may be some cost, at least from our cost savings, there may be some ideas there.
Yes.
Now,
thanks.
Going back to the issue though of the projects, typically what we will do is we will identify projects for the design component, and if we are only going to fund the design, we'd only fund maybe design, and or if we find to do design and construction, there's a possibility that while the funding comes in over 2 years. The project may actually last three and a half years. But that's we would be careful to make sure that we fund it so we don't get in a position where we're in the middle of a construction project and we don't have the funding for it. We may, though, come back and say, like we have now, we're in a position now where we have projects that we've already funded the design component that are sitting there waiting to go to bid. Is that fair? And so that's some of the ways we would do maybe the next program, too.
Another question, I guess, for Dan directly is, I'm back on page 10 where we're talking about leveraging other sources for street projects. $90 million of that is reimbursement from Prop 400.
That's correct.
$2 million from federal. So from the $90 million, first of all, how long do we have for the current authorization by voters for Prop 400? Because a lot of these projects are on the tail end of that. So how long do we have to get these projects built before Prop 400 expires, and how is this? How are we going to make sure that we try to preserve as much of this money and build as many of these projects as we can?
Yeah, Mayor, Councilmember Summers, it's a 20-year program.
Begun when?
They've identified, and it's the 4 or 5 year phases. And we had originally, I think it was 54 or 55 projects in there. And so they've set aside money, if you will, for our reimbursement to do those projects. If we get into a position where we can't move forward in the planned year, we can defer. That's an option. Obviously, we can move some forward, advance them. We've done that as well. Okay, so that money is essentially, I've been told, reserved for Mesa to use. Now, we don't get reimbursed if we don't build the project. That's the thing.
But Dan, to the point you've always reminded me of, Mayor and Council, here's the issue. Is even though, because our projects are backloaded, and let's say we thought, no problem, we'll just wait 15 more years, whatever, to do it. The amount of projects that are at that back end are there's so many and so enormous. It would be such a huge surge in our capacity to ramp up, to design, to oversee. It's just not really feasible that we would ever be able to do that amount of projects. Is that the way to look at it, Dan? We really need to spread these out over a better period of time.
And frankly, it presents a big cash flow problem for the regional program as well. You can imagine if all the cities would defer or everything was loaded to the back, how those would all get done, you know, in the last 5, 8, 10 years. So it becomes very different.
From our matching perspective, it would create a huge spike in our finances to come up with our matching component of that back end. So wherever we can, we're probably going to be suggesting to accelerate those projects earlier on so we can kind of spread that out more and keep that curve smoother from the financing perspective out into the future.
Is this $90 million fairly fixed? Is that what we can anticipate over the next 15 years, or could that grow with the rebound of the economy?
It's just identified within the 5 years.
Within the 5 years.
Specific projects that we've identified over the next 5 years.
Okay.
This is not for all 54.
If we were to have just done the projects as they're scheduled in MAG over the next 5 years, that amount would have been less because we've accelerated projects to bring those forward.
Correct.
I got you. So there is some flexibility, but we have to be careful in our planning.
Yeah, we have to look at the long term.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for the presentation. Last fall, I did support the package that you have here. And to put it in perspective, it was less than what I had hoped it would be. There are many other projects that I think were worthy that would meet needs in the community, but there certainly has been a dramatic turnaround in the economic landscape facing the city in the last 7 months. And the revenue potentials for cities such as ours are almost having to face walking through a shifting sea of quicksand in terms of federal revenues and state revenues and local revenues from sales and things like that. So I think it would be beneficial, Mayor, for us as a council and as a community to look at some other options in terms of the bond package. I do like the idea of looking at a smaller window or perhaps a two-year window of these capital improvements, because again, the old assumptions aren't holding true right now in terms of the dramatic shifts in the economy and costs that face the community. And I think it would be wise for us to look at some other options that that help us prioritize what can be done in the next 2 years if we have a successful bond package, recognizing these are all priority projects, but the timing for them is certainly different in the packages we see. So I think that would be helpful for me as a council member to evaluate. Thank you.
Councilmember Richens and then Councilmember Venter.
Thanks, Dennis. I couldn't agree more. Shifting economies make us have to reevaluate things, and we're going to the taxpayers specifically and saying, hey, we want the secondary property tax to do this, and so we need to be respectful about how we go about that. One question I had, just need to be clear, what happens to some money in a Prop 400 if there's a Prop 400 component of a project, a particular intersection, and we don't do that intersection, what happens to those Prop 400 funds? And can they be used somewhere else?
Okay, Mayor, Councilmember Richens, you referring to one just completely canceled or just deferring? Because to date, what we've been doing, if there was a project,
yes and yes,
let's
do both scenarios.
Okay. It's easier to just defer and put out to a future year, so till we can gather, you know, an idea of is this a project that's important to Mesa that we want to move forward on. If we came to the conclusion that this is a project we don't need anymore for some reason, that money still stays with Mesa and could potentially be applied to another project.
Does it have to be another street project? Could it be transit?
Yeah.
Could it be, you know, a different type of transportation? I'm just trying to learn here a little bit. I'm the new guy. You know.
I was going to invite up one of our newer employees, Ken Hall. He actually came from MAG, Maricopa Association of Governments. He's one of our senior planners. He might have a little inside information on the process for doing that. So maybe Ken could come up too, and then Scott Butler as well.
Actually, the thing to keep in mind is that we're not going to lose the money. The money will remain with Mesa for the whole 20-year program. In fiscal year 07 dollars, we have a total of $464 million. And every single year, what MAG does is they use the CPI inflationary index number, and they increase the amount that we'll be receiving over the duration of the 20-year period. But to answer your question, we would not lose the money. We could defer a project. We could cancel one and place the money onto another one. Or we could just do a like project, a new one, cancel it out and do a new one within close proximity.
And Mayor and Councilmember Richens, Ken's exactly right. But there were, because of the complex negotiations that went into building Prop 400, there were firewalls put in place so that the voters knew what they were voting on. And to your question, they must stay within the mode. So street dollars must stay for other street projects. They can't be shifted to highway projects or light rail or bus transit projects, so our street dollars must stay within the street account. There's also limitations about the geographic area. So, for example, at one project we've looked at very closely has been in Councilmember Kavanaugh's district, at the intersection improvements at Guadalupe and Dobson. We're concerned that, for example, if we opted not to do that project altogether, there's no other projects in close geographic proximity to that project, and we're afraid that it would not meet the MAG criteria to keep those dollars in a geographically close location. There are some projects in other areas of the community. Obviously, you could shift maybe from McKellips to Brown or something in that effect, but there are certain projects that we have concern about the geographic criteria.
So does that money just evaporate? Does it go back in the pool? Does it go to the west side? Because that's not anywhere near Dobson and Guadalupe either. So that doesn't really make any sense for MAG to just take it, oh, we're going to spend on the west side because it's not in close proximity either. So
there are, Mayor and Councilmember Richens, there are some unanswered questions that probably will be answered as this goes on. I know we Mesa fought very strongly to have some clarification, and we also fought that to define close geographic area as meaning within your municipal boundaries. We didn't win that battle at MAG, but I think as these projects go on and other communities experience that, we'll get some clearer direction as the Prop 400 evolves.
But it can't be shifted from streets to transit, you know, with $4 a gallon gas. That's not an option.
at all?
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, that's correct. That is not an option.
Thank you.
Alex?
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate Mr. Kavanaugh's comments when you're looking at the economy and some of the challenges that are going on. I would appreciate a worst-case scenario of coming back from staff of possibly, in consideration, I'm not exactly promoting this idea, but a one-year delay in this whole process, taking it from 08 to 09, but truly reflects the additional costs of an election, the ramifications of not accelerating some of the projects, and being able to have that as something to review in this whole decision-making process. I think it's something we probably ought to have there.
Okay, any other comments? Councilmember Richens.
I actually do want to have a piece of information, if that would be okay, about some of these intersection projects. You know, I was kind of just looking at the one in my district, the University and Country Club, and it seems to me the way I was, and I'm probably calculating the numbers wrong, but I'd like to get an understanding of historic traffic counts, because it seemed like that intersection, the traffic counts had diminished 10,000 cars a day for that intersection. So it made me wonder, well, why do we want to widen an intersection that the traffic counts have actually dropped? And there was a spike because of the 202 build through. Then when that went on farther east, the traffic counts went back to historical levels. And so, you know, would it be too much to ask for traffic counts for all these intersections so we can really understand a historic, you know, what are the factors that are causing these intersections? I know there's some safety issues there too, but you know, and identify that for each intersection so we can help prioritize these intersection improvements and the street widening projects. So, you know, some historic traffic counts maybe over, how far back do we have data easily accessible?
Probably 25 years.
I'll let you determine how far back you want to go. And then some of the safety issues you just evaluated, because if there's some real pressing safety issues, you know, even if traffic counts may have diminished a little bit, we're going to want to look at that.
Right. Mayor, Councilmember Richens, we've actually already done that.
Right.
We've got historical traffic volumes. We have projected traffic volumes. Keep in mind, this is for build-out. These projects that you're seeing, these 29 RTP projects, regional transportation plan projects, are for build-out, not necessarily for now. And when you got to try to fit in those 29 projects in 5 years or the original 55. And one other comment I like to make, those 55 projects in the 4 years have grown to many more projects because we have broken them up. Instead of doing a 4 and 5 mile long corridor project, we have taken or suggested and had been accepted by the previous council to break those up into intersection projects that saves money. Yet that's the constraining point, really, is the intersection, the signalized intersection. You can only allocate half the time for a street, if you will. So when we can add a lane there or a new left turn lane, in some cases a right turn lane, we're taking advantage of that green time. Okay. So what we've done is broken those projects up. So the 55 will grow to, you know, 100 plus probably, because there's smaller projects addressing the same congestion in the corridor. We're just not doing full widening for 88 feet or 94 feet wide for 5 miles. We're widening the intersection approximately a quarter mile in advance, taking advantage for an additional lane, bringing them through the intersection and merging comfortably back so we can take advantage of, you know, that technology. But we've got traffic volumes. Many of this list, it's quite amazing, are some of our top safety issues around the city. If we look at the combination of the 29 projects, what we look there is rear end crashes. That's a very good indicator of congestion, and left turn crashes. And so many of these projects will be adding a second left turn lane to again address that. So we have all that information. We'd be happy to share with you.
Right. As we consider this and prioritize these intersections, let's take a look at that again. And you may have presented to other councils, but we're new here.
Understood. So. Understood.
To wrap this up, I just have one more thing. Timing on this, as far as when we need to make a final decision. Debbie, if you could.
In terms of the ballot language, that has to be delivered to the county by July 24th, I believe. The council's last meeting here before its break is July 8th. I guess I would turn to Chuck and say, in terms of getting the paperwork done and the numbers in proper order, might be a little different.
If you want to reflect it in this current budget, this is the package you want to reflect, really next Thursday is our deadline.
Okay. Why don't we, if what I'm hearing,
why don't we have staff go back? I think that I'm hearing that, you know, without reflecting on what was presented, the world's changed. And I think we need to recognize that, and we need to understand that. And it's changed for the city. You know, the people, this isn't our decision. This is the citizens. We work for the citizens, and the world certainly has changed for them. And I think I feel very strongly that we need to recognize that, and we need to appreciate that and respect that. I just think that at this time, we probably need to go back and look at something that's maybe a little bit more palatable. I know we all have needs, but there are greater needs, and there are needs that work more closely into the timing and recognize the existing conditions. So if we could have staff, Mr. Brady, and let's put it on for next Thursday, come back and perhaps look at, I think I've heard mentioned here, maybe look at a two-year capital plan versus a five-year, and maybe reprioritize. And one other challenge I'd like to put forward, I know the timing is really short, but some of these projects such as, and I know we need fire stations, the question is, the fire stations that are in this are a traditional fire station. I know we can't go back and all of a sudden recreate, but just in your thought process, think of perhaps some other alternatives that might get us through some of these things, understanding that you know, I'm really concerned about our coverage and what happens if. And I want to be at least getting that thought mode that if this bond package does not go forward, we still have people out there that have needs. And we need to start thinking in that mode. So if you could start doing that next Thursday, mm-hmm. we thank you so very much for the overview and for the explanation. I think we've got a good foundation now. Now next Thursday, let's start talking about specifics, if that's okay with everyone, and we'll move on then. Okay? Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Next item on the agenda, hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Has anyone been to anything in the last 2 days, I guess?
Council meeting.
A council meeting. Okay. Anything anyone want to report? Okay. Mr. Brady, schedule of meetings and general information.
Yes, Mayor. Just to remind the council, we have the next study session will be June 12th at 7:30 a.m. We're going to review bring back a two-year program. We have some follow-up, some items that we were pulled off the previous council agenda related to the budget. We really do need to wrap up the budget for decisions so that we can get that completed and get the notices out in order for the council to approve the budget on June 23rd. That would be the next council meeting, would be Monday, June 23rd. Just also a reminder, just for your schedules, when we get to July, we'll be meeting on July 1st and July 8th, which are Tuesdays, not Mondays, in order to meet the criteria to have our two council meetings in July, but also to give council a break. And hopefully every one of you has on your calendar August 28th and August 30th, which are a Thursday and a Saturday for the strategic planning session for the City Council.
Thank you. I'd like to add one thing. You know, obviously Gateway is an issue that is near and dear to all of us, and it's certainly a hot issue right now. As we all know, it was the previous council referred it back to the PNZ. You know, with five new members, and I have no idea what PNZ, the individual members, have as far as a background, I think that in the rush to get things through, it seems like we jumped ahead quite a bit. And we may have lost bearing on the basics that we're talking about. I think everyone that I've spoken to, and I know everyone on this council that I've spoken to, is in agreement that we need to protect Gateway and have it, put it in a position where it can maximize its highest use and its maximum potential. You know, once you get below that, the question of how we go about doing that has been open for a lot of debate. I would like to, if we could, maybe step back and let's go back to some basics. We've jumped from a very long study, which we paid a lot of money for, which covered more than simple land uses, to two options. And I think there was a lot in between that this council, I would like certainly to be updated on, and I'd like to certainly get some basics on. I've spoken with Rich Adams, planning and zoning chair, and he feels similar. He has agreed with me that perhaps what we might need or want is a joint council and planning and zoning study session dedicated specifically to Gateway.
And I believe that they will pull that off their agenda so that we can take care of that, hopefully in June sometime. And what we can do is I'd like to concentrate on the whole package. I personally don't want to debate option A, option B, option C, or D. I'd like to go back and remember that what we were looking at with Gateway was primarily an economic plan that, of course, at its most basic level, evolves into a land plan. And it seems to me like we, in a sense, we've lost some of those basics and jumped to what are we going to do on the corner of this street and this street, which I know we have to get to eventually. But if the rest of this council is not in opposition, I'd like to maybe step back and get a presentation from staff and from HDR to talk about some of the basic things that went into how we got where we are. So, Mr. Brady, if you could coordinate that, and maybe we can plan that sometime in June. Okay, thank you. Item four, Mr. Dennis Howe. I think we have a presentation on adult softball program.
After hearing the discussion, I feel a little bit minor, you might say, but it was
never minor.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I have a short time, so I'll get right to the point. I've been associated with the Mason Parks and Recreation Department for about 25 years, refereeing basketball and umpiring softball, as well as playing and coaching. I'm currently involved in three different Mesa adult softball leagues. My experience includes Phoenix, Tempe, Scottsdale, Gilbert, Chandler, and the Senior Olympics. Mesa used to be known as one of the best adult softball programs in the state. Over the past few years, I have seen that excellent reputation deteriorate. I have a large file of emails back and forth between the department managers and me over the past few years. I outline things that happen on the field of play and offer suggestions on how the department, field supervisors, and umpires could better handle situations and enforcement of the MESA rules found in their code of conduct and the coach's manual, as well as the Amateur Softball Association's rule book. In my opinion, the quality of the program continues to digress. I stress safety of the players, sportsmanship, preventing problems before they occur, and fair play. I do this because I care about the quality of the program. For this, I have received personal insults, suggestions that I take my teams to some other city, and an undeserved reputation of being a troublemaker. I have offered my services to help the program recruit new umpires and fund their training at no cost to Mesa, only to be ignored. My idea was to have a potluck picnic at a Mesa park and invite all the teams and staff. I play in a bluegrass band that would play, and also spent 2 years with the ASU Mariachis, who possibly would also play at the picnic. We would take donations for umpire recruitment and training. The department claims that they train their umpires, but from what I hear from the umpires themselves and what I see happening in ball games, I beg to differ. When I umpired for the city of Mesa, we were trained in enforcement of the rules, game control, preventative officiating. Sadly, I consistently do not see that happening, and the quality of the program shows it. We pay $450 for a 14-game season, plus an end-of-season tournament. This is a fair price, but we should be getting better game management for the money. In fairness, I know some good umpires and appreciate their work. However, good umpires are hard to find and hard to keep, especially when their fellow umpires are getting paid the same for less than desirable performance. I carry no ill will and continue to hope that the program can be brought back to a higher standard. I appreciate that time and money are stressful issues, and thank you for your time.
Dennis, thank you so very much. Ms. Crocker, any request to speak from citizens present?
No additional requests, Mayor.
Okay, if we have none, do I have a motion to adjourn? Ms. Summers, Councilmember Summers moved, second by Councilmember Higgins. We are adjourned.
Mayor? You need all in favor.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, now we're all adjourned.